Welcome to the stream. I'm Josh Rushing, sitting in for Femi Okay today. Our smartphones rely on a range of rare minerals to give them their magic. But what does the continued global demand for the latest gadgets mean for people digging up precious materials in places such as DR Congo? A new mobile app called 7Grams aims to answer that. It was recently featured at Sundance Film Festival. Here, let's take a look.
7Gram is a journalistic project that tells the story of your smartphone through your smartphone using augmented reality. Your phone contains around 7 grams of rare or precious minerals such as tungsten, cassiterite, cobalt, or gold. One country has these minerals in abundance, the Democratic Republic of Congo. And those are essentials in making our device the powerful tools we have come to embrace and that have completely changed the way we communicate. 7Gram exposes the hidden consequences that the manufacturing of our electronics has and offers solutions to prevent more abuse and injustice from reaching our electronics.
To discuss the app and the impact of mining on DR Congo, we're joined by Karim Ben Khalifa, the director of 7Grams. He's in Berlin. Sarah Heenan is an associate professor of globalization at the University of Antwerp. And Bosisi Nikuba is a professor at the Catholic University of Bukavu in eastern DR Congo. He focuses on natural resources and the environment. Oh, and I should mention one more guest at the table is you. If you're watching this on YouTube, see that box over there? We have a live stream producer waiting to get your comments to me so I can get them in the show and we can all be a part of this discussion. Speaking of discussion, Karim, tell us about 7Grams. Like, where'd you get the idea for this?
Well, in 2015, I was in eastern Congo and I was photographing arsenal miners in the gold and cassiterite mines in Kivu, North Kivu. Mm-hmm. And I realized photographing with my smartphones, they were, you know, extracting the raw minerals and in my hands, the end product. And I mean, I thought there was something to do about that.
Mm. It must have struck you as a sense of irony that the very thing they were digging out of the rock there, you were actually using in that moment to capture that moment.
Yeah, I mean, it was just like a moment where you realize something is so extreme, and also you see the horrendous condition in which they're working, and automatically I had the idea. It took a few years to put the idea into place, but here we are. This app, 7Grams, is available now everywhere in the world.
One of the things in it that moved me the most was Chance's story. Here, we have a clip of that. The animation in this is really beautiful. Check it out.
There was always enemies to fight, territories to conquer, resources to dig. Down. Under. In the pit. The world ends. Weeks become months. Months become years.
The story of Chance is that he's kidnapped, he's turned into a child soldier, and then into a miner. So he captures a lot of these stories, that I think, in kind of one character. How did you meet him? What's his story beyond just this?
You see, there is so many people like Chance in eastern Congo, and this is, I think, one of the drama. So Chance was someone that we had a chance to discuss with and completely understand what he went through. Mm-hmm. Happens that he still lives in the area where he was abducted. And no, he decided to give his story, but to remain anonymous because it was very important for him that his life would not never be put in danger or the one of his family.
Well, Cecile, I'd like to bring you in at this point. And I'm thinking about Chance here. How common is this? What's the scope of this situation?
There are so many artisanal miners in DR Congo. They have different stories. There are nearly 250,000 people, and you have a big portion just in the gold sector, and you have so many other minerals being dug. So really a big percentage of the Congolese population just surviving on artisanal miner. It's actually the second biggest employer right after agriculture.
Yeah, I want to bring in a video comment from someone in our community who's an associate professor at the University of Nottingham, Siddharth. Here, check this out.
Roughly 70% of the world's supply of cobalt is mined in the Democratic Republic of the Congo. And this cobalt is mined in appalling conditions. I've spent months on the ground in the Congo and seen hundreds of thousands of peasants, including tens of thousands of children, caked in toxic filth and grime in pits and tunnels, eking out a subhuman existence on a dollar or two a day to dig cobalt out of the ground and feed it up to the supply chains of mega cap tech and EV companies around the world. Much more needs to be done to raise awareness of this human rights catastrophe, and much more needs to be done to alleviate the subhuman colonial conditions under which cobalt is mined to power our lives every day.
Yeah, and from there, I actually want to take us right into a bit of video we have where it's a couple of gold miners describing what it's like working there. Check this out.
C'est grave, vraiment. Là, nous y entrons comme...
It is really serious. We enter here like animals. We have to walk on all fours, and if we get tired, we scoot along on our buttocks in order to get to where we need to reach.
Nous arrivons là que nous allons partir.
On n'est pas rationné.
We don't get sustenance. We don't even have the means to find soap to wash ourselves. And if we have no motivation, if we don't find gold, it's difficult to eat.
Si on n'a pas encore trouvé la matière, en tout cas, c'est difficile à manger pour nous.
So, Bosisi, you were saying there's 250,000 artisanal miners just in the gold sector alone that are basically living this existence. Do we have any kind of numbers on what the impact is on their lives and what the impact is on the environment from this kind of mining?
So there is one fact that is necessary to understand. For McConaughey illustrated this very clearly. For every ring of gold that is produced, you need 20 tons of raw material that is extracted from the ground. So all this underground being taken out, is either breathed by the miners, so this is a very dusty environment they work in, or goes into the rivers. And in the rivers, you have fish and so many organisms which suffer from it. And this is just like the tailings that come along the material. But in addition to that, you have more toxic elements like mercury, some acids that are added in the processing of these materials. So there are so much toxicity, so much element that are neither healthy for humans or for other organisms in the environment that come along in this process. So, yeah, not a great environment.
Sarah, this is a slow-moving disaster. I mean, we've heard about this for years. Why are we still here talking about it?
Yeah, that's a very good question. I mean, in terms of the working conditions, very little has changed. Despite the fact that there has been quite some attention at the international level for this issue since about 15 years, but not much is changing. And on the one hand, we can maybe talk about global supply chain initiatives later, but also, a lot is changing inside the DR Congo in the artisanal and small-scale mining sector. First of all, there's a number of formalization initiatives that require miners to group into miners' cooperatives and to work in legal zones that have been established by the Congolese government. So they're working on that. But in reality, we see that, especially for gold, which is more easy to smuggle, less easy to control, that at least 95% of the gold is still produced illegally and so it's not registered. Another development that we see in the sector is an intensification of extraction in the sense that there is now use of new technologies such as cyanidation. There is mechanization through the use of ball mills. So the sector that was previously purely artisanal, let's say, using handheld hammers and chisels, is now more and more mechanized, which in turn it has positive effects on the productivity, but it also has additional negative effects on health. So we see a number of changes, but when we look at the working conditions and issues of health and safety, we see barely any.
So, Karim, when you look at the really deplorable conditions on the ground and you connect the dots from those people to the companies that are profiting, who are we looking at? Who's making the money here?
Yes. Sorry.
No. Karim, I would just add, I would just build on what you said, Sarah, because, look, this is an incredible piece of technology. The engineering that went to create this is amazing, and it changed the world. We said that earlier. So now we can do this, but we can't follow minerals from Eastern Congo to China with all these intermediaries. I think we can do it, and I think those companies can do it. They're just not doing it because there is no pressure from the consumers, and there is no interest for them to change the supply chains. But I think, and I do believe, they can do it, and we need just to put more pressure. I mean, I'm just not saying it's simple, obviously, but those up and talking about it is exactly what is needed, awareness.
Well, and I think one of the ways to put pressure on this has been through the courts, perhaps. There was a lawsuit filed here in the U.S. Unfortunately, the judge tossed it out last November, but we have a comment from one of the lawyers who helped present that lawsuit.
We're the group that filed the lawsuit against Apple, Tesla, Google, Microsoft, and Dell for using cobalt mined in the DRC by children. We represent 16 families that had a child either maimed or killed while mining cobalt for one of these companies. All of the companies, even though they claim they have policies prohibiting child labor in their supply chains, they deny any responsibility, even though they have the resources and the power to fix it. A conservative judge threw the case out, but we've appealed already, and we're going to keep fighting until we get justice for these children and the others.
Okay, there's a couple of things he mentioned there that I want to touch on. One is the stream reached out to Apple, Tesla, Microsoft, Google, and Dell for comments on this. We received a comment back only from Dell, and it says Dell Technologies is committed to the responsible sourcing of all materials, which includes upholding the human rights of workers at any tier of our supply chain and treating them with dignity and respect. We're working together with our peers, suppliers, and other stakeholders to address the risk associated with mining operations and conflict afflicted in high-risk areas and helping ensure the human rights of all who work in those communities are upheld. So that's what Dell says. But I want to point out, we can go to my computer here again, I want to point out what the judge said in the lawsuit, because Karim, you mentioned all the intermediaries in between, and my question here is, are they being used in a way to obfuscate the source? And if so, is that a winning strategy? Here's what the judge said in this particular case, and I'm quoting from him. It might be true that if Apple, for example, stopped making products that use cobalt, it would have purchased less of the metal from Umicore, which might have purchased less from Glencore, which might have purchased less from CMKK, which might thus have instructed Ismael to stop purchasing cobalt from child artisanal miners, which might have led to some of the plaintiffs to have not been mining when their injuries occurred, the judge said. But this long chain of contingencies in all its rippling glory creates mere speculation, not a traceable harm. So if the system is designed for all the middlemen to create obfuscation, is this judge not saying, yep, that's a winning strategy?
Well, I think we need to do something about it. There is people on the grounds that are suffering, and there must be better ways for those companies that are some at the richest in the world, the most wealthiest company in this world. I'm sure they can find a way to source. And it's not about boycotting the resource of Eastern Congo. Absolutely not. It's working with artisan miners on the ground to find the solutions. And I completely believe this is possible.
Sarah, Dell said is are the big companies doing enough here?
Yeah, maybe I want to point out that there has been a shift in recent year in those supply chain initiatives, whereas I think it's in a positive direction. Previously, you had a very strict focus on conflict minerals. And so, for instance, in the US Dodd-Frank Act, the conflict minerals from the DR Congo were singled out, which had as an effect that buyers stopped sourcing minerals from the region, which in turn had a direct effect on livelihoods. So this has been well documented in academic research. It had a devastating effect on miners, on their families, on the whole population. So the solution is definitely not stop sourcing from the region. Now, there has been an acknowledgement of this issue, and nowadays companies are shifting more towards responsible sourcing. It's the idea of due diligence, that companies are monitoring the risks in their supply chain and acting upon these risks. Now, I do have a couple of problems with that. And the first is that the framing in which these risks are done is very much done by the downstream companies. And so it does not necessarily correspond to the priority concerns of the people on the ground. And secondly, I mean, you frame something as a risk in your supply chain, so the framing is very much directed towards elite companies. For an artisanal miner, he cannot identify this as a supply chain risk, right? If he is faced with extortion, it's a problem that has economic, political, social, gender, cultural dimensions, and that is affecting his body, his family, his life on a daily basis. So I think this links a bit to the idea that that there is a quick fix to these issues, and that the supply chain can be fixed, and that if we identify risks at particular nodes in the supply chain, that we can replace these dirty conflict nodes with clean nodes. And it's just not as simple as that.
So, Bosisi, can I ask you? We're saying that we don't want to boycott these things. What should we do? Where, from your position, do you see pressure should be applied to change what's happening?
Yeah, I think it's very important to understand how life is for these miners before they got in the mine. Some of them were living in conditions that were so poor that the only way to survive was to go in the mine. So, these conditions in which they are horrible. It's really a nightmare. But they had much worse before. So saying that you dodge these minerals or you don't take from them, that won't help at all. So the first thing is, at what price are you trying to get? With companies like Apple, Tesla, and so on, they have the ability to take at least minerals, this very precious mineral coming from artisanal, at a fair price and still make profit. Because as it was mentioned, they represent a very small percentage of the actual cost of this product. It's just a few grams that are used to produce these the phones and electric cars. The second thing is something I have seen, so much energy being spent on developing technologies cobalt-free batteries, just to be able to stay away from this bad price artisanal miners bring. But the problem is, how poor do they become when you stop taking their cobalt? How poor do cassiterite miners become when you can no longer get what they can produce? They have to go back, grow the foods they can eat, be isolated in a portion of the forest, and probably die from hunger when they have a bad season. So on a human perspective, I think there is a need of more pressure to this company.
The president of DR Congo recently addressed this in a speech. Felix Tshisekedi said this.
We have noticed for some years that people come into our country with empty hands and pretend to be entrepreneurs and then leave with billions in their pockets while we remain poor. That's why I came here to speak with our partners, so we can understand each other on a number of things. From now on, this needs to be a win-win partnership. We won't accept any other partnership, only a win-win partnership.
Bosisi, how much accountability falls on the government of DRC and President Tshisekedi?
I don't think, unfortunately, it's quite easy to make a very good political speech to rouse the masses. But like when you have to look at the concrete action the government is doing of the miners, there is not much, as Sarah said earlier. You can see there are no changes. Usually you have policies that are not adapted, not so much energy is put into really making a change into the artisanal. The second thing is you have to take into account Congo is one of the countries with the poorest budgets. You have companies like Tesla, Apple, which have like a thousand times the budget of Congo. So in terms of power, President Tshisekedi may be the leader of his people, but he has very little to say to Tim Cook or Elon Musk when it comes to decisions that are made on cobalt. So I don't see much change from the government, and I also don't have the highest expectation because I know how difficult it is when you don't have enough money to make concrete change. You don't even have enough money to do research and understand the situation on the field. You don't have enough money to put up right policies. So I really wouldn't be about blaming the government from what is happening. I think the responsibility lies a bit.
I want to bring in a couple of voices from YouTube before we end the show here. One of them is Sergio Romano. If the world really wants the success of Africa, it should protect and help Africans to progress and not exploitation. Here's a comment off of Twitter from Kwame Egese. What does the director do personally to ensure Congolese people are protected from harmful conflicts as a result of getting this mineral that might make huge profits after selling smartphones? And Kareem, I'm not going to put that all on you. I'm going to put me in that group too. What can I do here as the consumer? What can we all do as the consumers in this situation?
I think with awareness, we're going to start repairing our phones. We're going to start recycling our phone. Only 20% of our electronics is actually recycled, so there is an ecological problem in this. But there is also a lot of resources that could get back to the supply chain. And definitely ask those companies and show them that you value the fact that those a device are produced without violence, without injustice, and there is ways to do it. We understand it's not that easy, but again, if you can do something as engineered as a smartphone, I'm sure you can find a way to buy from artisanal miners in Eastern Congo the resources you need at a fair price, and that is a win-win for everyone. It is a win-win for those companies because they'll stop supporting business and injustice.
And Sarah, fairly quickly here, what international structures need to be put in place? What international authorities are there to affect change in this?
Well, I think we now see an evolution towards more public regulation because these supply chain initiatives, these private supply chain initiatives were voluntary. And we have seen the limits of this, of like the willingness of companies to invest in this, to invest resources in this. And so the court case that was mentioned already here is one example of like a shift back to giving more responsibilities to governments and legislation that is actually is mandatory. And we also see mandatory due diligence requirements now. So I think that's very important also for the government to jump in.
You know, Sarah, putting your hope in the court case that the judge already threw out feels less than hopeful. It's less than what I wanted here. But as we know, the lawyer said earlier that they are going to appeal that. Listen, for viewers, get your phone out right now. We're going to show you a QR code where you can take a picture of this and you'll be able to get 7 grams on your phone, iPhone or Android, and you'll be able to see this incredible AR experience. Thank you so much to my guests for joining us on the stream today. And for all of you out there watching, we'll see you tomorrow.